Hip-Hop Podcast. Hey, on the pod today, I have my guy Bo Root. I peppered him with a handful of Nebraska football questions. There was a realignment discussion we had at the end of this pod. That is all coming up. But, full disclosure, we recorded this pod on Wednesday, August 9th. And since recording, some fairly big slash interesting news hit the Nebraska football world with Xavier Betts announcing that he is leaving the Nebraska football team. So I wanted to give my quick thoughts on that, and then we'll throw it to the pod with yours truly and Bo Root. So, okay, now for the second time in the past 18, 19 months or whatever it is, Xavier Betts has decided to call it quits and step away from the Nebraska football team. The first time he stepped away was in March of 2022. He didn't play last season, obviously. He even stopped going to classes for a period of time. Then, of course, we all know Scott Frost gets fired, Matt Rhule gets hired, and Xavier Betts then decides that he wants to rejoin the team in the spring. Of course, Matt Rhule welcomes him back with open arms. And then now, with 3 weeks before the season kicks off, Xavier Betts calls it quits again. So, yeah, first, I just want to give the kind of quick timeline of that stuff. But first, so here's my reaction. First was Xavier Betts himself. I will say I'm really surprised by this, simply because he worked his ass off to even get eligible. Like, he worked really hard just to get eligible to play. He passed 21 credit hours in the spring to become eligible. 21 hours. Anybody that's taken college classes, no, that's a lot. That takes a ton of work, a ton of focus, and a ton of drive to do that. You got to be motivated on a different level to do that. And then on top of that, so he's doing all the class stuff, and he's doing all the football stuff, right? He's working really hard to get back into the good graces with the coaches, his teammates, earn their trust, get back into shape in the weight room, go through all that you go through as a football player with, you know, spring, winter, and then even into fall camp. And he gets through 2 weeks of fall training camp, which is obviously really, really difficult. And then after all that work in the classroom, all the work in the weight room, all the work in the practice field, and you're just a few weeks away from the reward for all that work, which is the season. You get to play actual football games in front of 90,000 people on national TV. To be so close to the reward and the fun part, he just calls it quits. So, yeah, really surprised me. Although, maybe I shouldn't be surprised, because Betts, he already quit once. And I think most people around him pointed the reason towards he just doesn't really love football. Now, there was some narratives out there, like he didn't necessarily love Frost. Maybe the Mickey Joseph thing, Mickey was maybe a little too hard of a coach, all those things. There was a bunch of different reasons, but I think a lot of people felt like, you know, Xavier's just, he didn't really love football. And the truth is, if you don't really love football, you probably won't last through it, man. Anybody that's played football, really at any level, but I mean, certainly at the Division I level, it's a whole nother world. But football's hard. It's hard. Football isn't for everyone. It's the thing about football is that, you know, it's the only sport where you practice like 10 times more than you actually play. More like 20 times more, or whatever it is. I mean, you practice all year round for 12 games. That's it. And the beauty of football is also kind of the thing that makes it hard. And that is, if your heart isn't really in it, if you don't really love it, football will kind of chew you up and spit you out. And I think that kind of that's kind of what happened here. That's my read. And listen, Matt Rhule kind of said as much after the news. Here's Matt Rhule's quote on Xavier Betts. Rhule said, quote, "He came to me and said, hey, coach, my heart's not in it. It caught me by surprise. He's done a lot to get to this point. I don't know what else is going on in his life. Just wants to do something else. He was doing great. No issues, no problems, nothing off the field. Just didn't want to play football anymore." That's from Rhule on Betts leaving the team. And that pretty much sums it up, doesn't it? Like, heart isn't in it, doesn't want to play football anymore. that was real 18 months ago for Xavier Betts. And if he didn't love it then, maybe it was naive for him, for us, for everyone to think that he would love it now. But again, it is just surprising to me that he grinded and worked as hard as he did to be able to play something he knows deep down inside in his heart he doesn't really love. Right? That's kind of like no one knows you quite like you. So it is interesting to think that, man, he worked so hard to get back in a Nebraska football uniform when maybe he knows deep down inside he didn't love it. You know, I don't know. Maybe he thought he would grow to love it. Sometimes we do that to ourselves, right? Maybe he liked he being Xavier Betts. Maybe he liked the idea of Xavier Betts, the football player. Because sometimes we like the idea. We do that relationships with people, right? Like, I like the idea of this girl being my girlfriend, or this guy being my boyfriend or whatever. Like, I like the idea of it, but then when you see it through, it's like, it's just not quite there. And, you know, maybe just wasn't in the cards for him. My guess is he's kind of one of those guys. My guess is his whole life, football was just something he was really naturally good at, but he didn't really love it. And you can get away with that in peewee football and in high school football because the grind and the competition and the work isn't near what it is in college, or the pressure. You know, in high school, the games aren't that hard because you're just so much physically better than everyone that it's just easy for you. But college is when it gets real. Everyone is good. Everybody's talented. Everybody's big, fast, and strong. And the level of work and sacrifice and dedication it takes to be a major Division I football player is way more than it takes to be a high school football player. And again, that's not for everyone. And it clearly just wasn't for Xavier Betts. At least he gave it another shot. And maybe giving it another shot, maybe he's really at peace with it now. Because he can kind of now know it just really wasn't for him. But at the same time, man, I'm 39 years old. You can live with a lot as you get older. But one of the hardest things to live with is regret. I really hope this isn't something that one day when Xavier Betts is 30, 40, 45, 50 years old, he wakes up and just really regrets this period and regrets quitting the Nebraska football team, not once, but twice. I hope he's fully at peace with it because it's a big decision. And I hope he truly has no regrets. Football is hard. Football isn't for everyone. And if your heart isn't in it, football will chew you up and spit you out. So that's the Xavier Betts part of it. The other part of it now is that, you know, the news to the team itself. I mean, just a couple of weeks from the season getting kicked off. I mean, it's certainly not ideal timing. And it's a blow. I mean, it is a blow. I don't want to go overboard on it and paint, you know, Xavier Betts out to be like he was Randy Moss or something like that. Like, I don't want to go overboard on it because the guy hasn't played in a football game since 2021. But given the context of that wide receiver room, that's where it is a blow. I mean, Betts is really, really talented. And that wide receiver room is really, really thin. I mean, without Betts, you're basically looking at three dudes with any real experience at all. Kemp, Washington, and Isaiah Garcia-Castaneda. It's basically those three and then a bunch of newcomers and freshmen. Oh, and by the way, the wide receiver coach, Garrett McGuire, is 24 years old, and this is his first major coaching gig. So that whole picture is a little unsettling. Especially when you also consider that you have a quarterback in Jeff Sims that has had accuracy issues and turnover issues as well. And as we've seen over the years at Nebraska, when you can't effectively throw the football and you don't really scare anyone through the air down the field, life is really hard for an offense. Defenses, they, you know, they load the box, they press the line of scrimmage, running the ball gets to be challenging, and all of a sudden, moving the ball becomes a challenge. Now, again, I don't want to go too crazy on this, but I think even with Xavier Betts, the wide receiver situation and passing game was a concern. So certainly without him, it's even more concerning. Now, again, to be fair, who knows what Nebraska was going to get from Betts this year anyways. Hasn't played in 2 years, wasn't super consistent when he was playing to begin with, but he did do things that popped. He did flash and make some big splash plays when he was on the field. Had that Penn State, remember during the COVID year, that Penn State reverse pop pass, ran it for a touchdown, looks smooth, looks fast. Oklahoma had that long go route along the Nebraska sideline in the either late in the third quarter or in the fourth quarter. It was a big play, one-on-one, went up, caught it, ran past a guy, big gain, ended up setting up a touchdown, if I'm not mistaken. Had the long option pitch against Northwestern, first play of the second half. It's like a 70-yarder to the house, looked fast. So he had some game to him, man. And Nebraska needed all the help they could get at that wide receiver spot. So, you know, Garrett McGuire's job just got a little tougher. Matt Rhule's job just got a little tougher. Marcus Satterfield's job just got a little tougher. And we'll see how that position group performs. No Betts this year. Decent-sized blow. Decent-sized blow. Don't want to go overboard on it. Don't want to go crazy on it, but it hurts. And it's a big story. I mean, local kid, Bellevue West, all that stuff. So there you go. Some quick thoughts on Xavier Betts. Wanted to address that before I sent it to my pod with Bo. So let's do that. This was fun, this conversation with Bo. I just peppered Bo with about 7 or 8 questions, and we had a good discussion about a variety of things with Nebraska football. Had a deep realignment discussion at the end as well. So enjoy. Here it is. Yours truly, Bo Rude. I'll send it to myself. Nick, take it away. All right, we're back. Told you we're going to be back. I don't know why you wouldn't believe that we're back. Bo Robert Rude in the house. By the way, you have not made a comment about my candle that I have going here. You know what
Buffalo.
Armitage? How do you
but
say
this is a wax buffalo. My wife gets these all the time, so I know all about them. Smells good.
Smells good. So,
are you a candle guy now?
I'm slowly becoming a candle guy.
Wait a minute. Hold on.
I'm slowly becoming a candle guy.
I want you to talk to me. This is not something that your wife brought down. This is yours?
Well, like, yeah.
No, you're not joking here. This is serious.
This is real. This is real right now. Sometimes you don't know, does my podcast studio stink at all? I don't know. I just want to make sure it's not stinky. I don't want to bring you in here.
Are they sponsoring this pod?
No, this is
what you're saying.
Yeah, Nick Baugh here for candles.
You're a candle person?
I kind of like lighting candles. I'm not going to lie to you.
Can I ask you, when did this happen?
Kim got a bunch of candles, and I started smelling them, and then, I light them all the time. I just feel like my kids stink up the kitchen and different things, and you're like, I need a candle.
Okay, I need to think about this for a second, okay? I got to think about this.
What's wrong with two dudes talking football over a candle?
Over a candle? Okay, I'm thrown off, because this seems very unlike you.
Unlike Nicholas Allen? I used to be a Febreze guy.
I'm not against a candle.
If I had a visitor to the Jayhawk Towers, your boy would get the Febreze Erwer.
Should I tell the Jayhawk Tower story? How gross!
It was so gross. So Keith and I mean, you go ahead.
It's so gross. Nick
Jayhawk Towers is my Kansas freshman and sophomore
Kansas
year.
Kansas basketball. Yeah. Jayhawk Towers were the players all stayed, so there's two a dorm, and
yeah,
all of Nick's friends we'd come down and visit. We'd be like, all right, he'd have us over. Come crash at my place. We'd sleep on the floor. We were young college kids. So this is what college guys do. This is how we think. And this is how bad we are. And girls don't understand this. Is Nick has us all over. So we all are, out all night partying. Then the next day it's like, Right. Okay, let's go out again.
Of course.
Let's just shower up. We've had a long day of walking in the heat and the sun in the summer. Somebody showers and the next person's turn to shower. Then the next person. And so I think I'm like the last in line here, and I come take a shower, and everybody used the same towel.
That's so.
And I know you had never washed that towel.
No.
So we were all using your one towel that had never been washed.
It's so.
And it stank.
Gross.
And that's what guys do.
Because what are you going to do? Well, because what I realized, you know what I realized? I don't know if this was like for you. I feel like I always showered at Allen Fieldhouse.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So I really, as weird as it sounds, I don't feel like I showered at my apartment that much. I would always shower because, you know, you practice and you shower and then you go about doing whatever you got to do. But yeah, I was the only, I will say it. It did hit me as people were playing Pass the Dirty Towel. I was like, this, I do feel like a terrible person.
Oh, I mean, Nick, I just remember being like, when it got to me, it wasn't like a towel. It was like it was like dripping almost. Like you couldn't get dry.
You couldn't wring it out.
It wasn't going to dry you.
Yeah,
know?
That's bad. And that's bad.
Oh, my God. So I told my wife that story and she couldn't because like she washes our towels.
I know.
So frequently.
How often are you supposed to wash a towel? How many uses like a shower towel?
When I was single, let's just tell me something. There were different levels of clean that I lived by. But no, my wife, it's like constant rotation of towels, constant cleaning. It's not every use, no, but it is like.
How many uses though? Like, in a, I mean.
Do you go a week?
I mean, I can.
But I don't. I could go.
I would never wash my sheets too. My wife says we got to wash your sheets. I'm like, why?
Welcome to guy world, ladies that are listening. In college, none of us washed our sheets ever, like twice a year. Or it's like if you knew you had like a date or something, you'd be like, I better walk.
But even then, I'd be like, Febreze. I'm gonna hit it with the Febreze. Just hit him with the Febreze, and you know. But yeah, I. Never wash the sheets. Never wash the towel. I did feel bad. Everybody, all five dudes,
I still
or whoever was there,
that
all
towel. It was a, that was a scar.
Gross, so. A gross towel. It was. See, the problem too is it wasn't even clean to begin with.
No,
it not clean to begin with. Four, five dudes months. Showered.
It may have been sitting there for months.
Oh, you might have been dirtier than you when you were before you showered.
It didn't stop. At
Here's
all.
A great. This is a perfect segue to. I just wrote down like I think I got to 10 questions. I'm just throwing at you.
Yeah.
My first question is. And it's along these lines, but can you believe how much easier training camp has gotten at Nebraska?
I'm so jealous. It's a jealousy that I shouldn't even let myself go to. It's so good to be an athlete now. These guys, it's good. Like I'm going to be happy for them.
So that's what I didn't
but
know
I'm
if you were.
There. I am. There's a jealousy of how good they got. They're getting paid, and it's easier. Like it only gets better.
I mean, the thing I wrote down is because. Rule had them all stay in the dorms for camp.
Mm-hmm.
And like, that's viewed as like we're staying in the dorms. Isn't this hilarious?
Yeah.
It's like to me, it's almost like, I don't know if you ever went to, I think it was in Chicago as we went to, there's a restaurant in Medieval Times.
Oh yeah.
And
like, look at
where
this.
Where you have to, if I remember right, at Medieval Times, you weren't given silverware because you really tried to replicate like the old days. And it was kind of like, can you believe this? We don't have silverware.
They lived like
can
this?
You believe they actually, you had to eat with your hands? I mean, I think there's an element with these, with the players now. They're checking into a dorm and they're like, this is hilarious, dude. Yeah, can you believe this? Two weeks in here?
This like, is funny. Like, it's weird. You're right. Because it's not like, when they did it in the old days, it was like, that's reality.
Yeah.
And when they do it now, it's like, we're pretending to do what they used to do as a novelty.
Yes. That's exactly what it is. And I don't know what it is about that, that it made me enough to want to write down and just throw it at you of like, I can't believe how much easier camp has gotten. And just, I don't know if you watch, they put up, they're filming like a Hard Knocks type thing for Nebraska football. The first one is like 40 minutes long. And, you know, they have all the guys checking into their dorm. And you can just tell they're all, like, there's an element of like, this is hysterical. Can you believe this situation? It's like.
It's because I think it's like they're so self-aware of like, this is what they used to do. And now we.
I had to throw that at you. It's like somehow it's got to the point where staying at a dorm is like, man, I tell you, we are really, we're scaring ourselves straight.
Yeah.
We are going to, man, I tell you. You got to live in a dorm. But, okay, so I wanted to throw that at you.
I mean, that's so true, though. It's so true.
Camp's got, well, I mean, and now there's only, you can only hit so many times. You can only.
One practice a day. Two-a-days don't exist. I mean,
you used to do two-a-days.
They take years off your life. 3 weeks a year, two practices a day equals you live 5 years less. I think so. I mean, you're going to live to 95, you're a 90-year-old now. 75 for you? Sorry, you're 68. Like, you die sooner because of those days.
I mean, not only was it 2 days. I mean, you guys were just banging, crushing, tackling each other.
I bet it's some bad ones. But yeah, I remember my first one as a freshman, it was like, you couldn't believe how hard it was. Like 2 days, full pads, all day, every day. You were on the scout team just taking every rep, just like,
getting mauled by Richie, like, incognito.
Just like cheap shot, and you're like, oh, God.
Why am I doing this? I wanted to start with that. But it's just the whole thing. I think it's smart by rule, you know, get those guys, you know, force them. I like the decision from rule. I just think it's funny when you stop and be like, think about what's happening here.
Yeah.
We're staying at a dorm because they're all checking in. They're all like giggling. They're like, can you believe this? It's like, come on, man.
Well, and I think I saw something one of the kids was talking about, like, my screen time is way down. I'm like, it's just like, jeez, what a different world.
This,
like,
is a different world. Okay, I'm going to slide this over to you because you might need it for this one. Question number two. What game, just so you can look at the schedule for it. I wrote this down. I should have prepped you for this stuff, but I'm not going to prep
you.
We always
wing it.
What game strikes you as the most important? And I'm leaving this open-ended because I think you can look at it a bunch of different ways. You can look at it of like, it's, you know, a game. If you win that game, it would have an enormous impact. If you win that game, Nebraska would be in a position to make a bowl. It's beating a rival. It's, you know, there's a lot of different ways you can frame it. To me, there were three games that jumped out at me. You want me to throw the three games at you? The three candidates that, like, just glancing at the schedule and going, which games jump out at me as just really important shape in the year? I wrote down the Minnesota game.
Yep.
Because, I mean, really, if Nebraska wins, the excitement of that, I think if you win that game, you're likely going to go beat Colorado, and then you're likely starting 4-0.
People are poo-pooing Colorado and their overall chance against us pretty heavily. I guess I didn't think that was going to be as easy as maybe people are saying.
As the offseason has progressed, I was with you initially. I'm starting to arrive to where I think it's more of a, I mean, they were horrible last year.
Yeah, they were like a game. Did they win one or two games?
Yeah, they won one game and they gave up like 44 points per game. I mean, they weren't even close in these games. The one thing that scares me though is I saw Urban Meyer went on with Colin Cowherd, and Urban and Cowherd asked him about Colorado, and Urban said, I went and, you know, he said he's friends with Prime and he went and watched camp, and he goes, I was shocked by what I saw, and what I saw was a good team. And you're like, yikes. That's not what
I know. They got like some 5-star guy.
They got Deion Sun.
One 5-star guy.
The Nebraska is a 7.5-point favorite in the preseason line, but okay. But so I wrote down the Minnesota game. I also wrote down at Illinois, and the reason I wrote that down,
I think I know why.
Reason I wrote that down is because if you really look at it, the next 2 weeks, Nebraska has a bye week, and then the next 2 weeks are back-to-back home games against Northwestern and Purdue, probably two of the more. And, you know, Frost got in trouble by saying this at one point of winnable games on the schedule. I mean, Northwestern's been a train wreck with all the stuff they're dealing with Pat Fitzgerald, and they haven't been good. Purdue has a first time ever head coach and a young guy in Ryan Walters. So they're, I don't know. I look at that game and I'm like, man, you win at Illinois and you got a shot at like three straight conference wins.
Yeah.
And then I wrote down Iowa just for obvious reasons.
Nick, I hate doing this.
You agree?
Before you said it, if I had to pick four games, those four, literally before you said it. And here's my logic. My logic is this. Similar to the last two seasons, at Illinois, Northwestern in
Dublin.
And I felt like those were the most important games of the year. Those two openers. And that's not the case for everybody. You know, for Ohio State, the most important game is Michigan at the end of the year. Typically with us, it's Iowa at the end of the year. With us in the last 5 years, we lack confidence. We lack momentum. I think the first game of the year is the most important. I think it's by far the most important. Win at Minnesota, it changes everything. The whole season is changed on Minnesota. If we can win, Nebraska is so pumped. Then we have confidence going against Colorado. Hopefully we win that. Then we're losing our mind. The Nebraska State will lose its mind because we're probably going to win our first four games.
Yeah, you're going 4-0, and then Michigan comes to
town.
Who
are we beating? Michigan? We're probably not beating Michigan. But we've won four straight games, all depending on if you can beat Minnesota. So I actually think, like, you can look at Michigan, you can look at Michigan State, Wisconsin, you can look at Iowa. All irrelevant. I think it's Minnesota, push every chip in to win it. I know it's the first game and it's a long season, but we, as Nebraska, we lack confidence and momentum. We can't get it. It's been a decade of just like trying to grab water or something.
Yeah.
We're like, cut, it's there. Yeah. I'm just trying to squeeze it. You know, like, that's what it feels like. And a Minnesota win would all of a sudden shift the psyche. I feel like, oh, we can do this. And that's all this team needs, I think. I don't think this team is near as good as the 21 team.
I don't either.
Or probably the 22 team.
Right.
And, the 20, 21, 22 teams are all probably better than this team. And this team has a chance, though, like, to get the win and, like, have a chance to have a better season.
I agree. What's weird, though, is you would think it's not like if you lose that game, there's an equal negative poor impact. You know, like if Nebraska goes and loses to Minnesota, I don't think it's like, oh boy. But at the same time, like, here's what you got to find a way for when, whatever, what date is it? So you got to find a way for on September 16th, when Northern Illinois, that game is kicking off, you better have one win.
That's the right answer. Yeah.
You do not want to go into that game 0-2, and it's like, ugh. Then everybody's a little tight in that game, and yeah, I
just don't like Colorado sitting at two because of this is not, you know, like the more you read history, you know, like, hey, it doesn't happen the exact same way, but history finds a way to be very close to what it's like.
Right.
We've seen this Colorado movie, like second game of the year, like, ooh,
I know,
win the first one and then the second one. We don't win the first one, and then that second one all of a sudden seems way freaking harder.
Yeah, I think the answer is Minnesota. I think the answer is Minnesota, but I wanted to talk
about a well-coached PJ Fleck team. That's at Minnesota, first game of the year. We're a new team. I would say it's going to be a really hard game to win. Doesn't mean we can't, but that's why I feel like it's the most important. We win that, I think it changes everything. We don't win it, it's actually not the end of the world.
No.
It's not. It's just, though, it feels more like same old Nebraska.
Right. And if you win that game, you got a real shot to be 4-0 with Michigan coming to town, where nobody expects you to win that game. So you can really go play free. And what is it? Nebraska hasn't won three games in a row since 2016.
Probably, yeah.
I mean, the Frost era,
they never won three in a row. Yeah. We talked about it 100 times.
But
Colorado the same way. Like, okay, you say we don't beat Minnesota, the season's not over.
Yeah,
you can beat Colorado and win three in a row. That gives us our three in a row. The fans will be very excited about that.
Yeah.
Michigan's going to be tough. But I just think, you got to win one of the first two.
The reason, because you could apply the logic we just had and choose Colorado as an important game. But I just think because it's a conference game as well, I think I'm gonna pick Minnesota. Well,
and I think if you beat Minnesota, you're gonna beat Colorado.
Yes.
But if you lose to Minnesota, it's still a coin flip with Colorado. I think we still win that game. But it seems that game is just, it could springboard us a little bit.
Next question. This is gonna be quite fast. How many carries per game do you think for Jeff Sims? DiNardo said that he thought two per quarter for a total of eight. I think more than that.
With scrambles, I mean, think 10 or 12 probably, right?
Right. Well, okay, so let's say designed runs. You think eight or do you think more? I think more.
I think with our I keep going to these receivers. Like, if guys can't get open, like if we don't have threats there, the quarterback has to run.
I think it's one of those things where I listen to coaches all the time, and I'm bringing up basketball, but it's not apples to apples, but it is at the same time, where coaches will be like, I'm playing my starting point guard too many minutes. You have to force me to go to my bench. I got to get in breathers. There you go. He blew out the candle.
Oh, I didn't mean to.
No, it's okay. It's been burning.
You got a lighter?
A yeah, it's okay.
Let's get this candle going.
I took my lighter back upstairs. But people can have plans on the front end of being like, we got to go to our bench. We got to do this. We got to do that. But all of a sudden the game hits and you're like, you want to take that guy out? No, I don't want to take that guy out. I say that to say, I bet Marcus Satterfield and Matt Rule is sitting there going like, we cannot run Jeff Sims into the ground. We cannot carry him too much. We cannot. But all of a sudden the game comes and it's third and one and you go.
Let me tell you something.
Let's give it to Sims here.
If it's the first game of the year and you're playing, La Tech or Northern Illinois, like, put him on the count.
Yeah.
It's the first game of the year playing Minnesota. If he needs 20 carries, give him 20. Like, you got to win the game. Like, this is not – we're worried about Jeff Sims' pro career. We're worried about Jeff Sims making it through the season. I think you got to basically be like, let's beat Minnesota.
You got to do all you can do.
Anything we got to do, let's do it. That means the first game of the year, we're going to run Sims every other play because we don't trust anybody else. You just got to do it. And you know what? Maybe we got to scale back as the year goes. I am done with the saving people thing. I felt there was a little too much of that with Martinez.
I agree.
It's an attitude thing. Like, you're not thinking our job is to win. Your job is I'm managing players and I think it's just you can't do that anymore.
I couldn't agree more.
Let's win the game, Sims, whatever it takes.
That's why I think it takes way over. I mean, I just think it's I get the spirit of the thought on the front end, but I'm just telling you, when they're on that sideline and it's third and two and they're at Minnesota, and if Jeff I think
give him the ball. Give him the ball, and you know what? I just don't think we can
be
thinking in terms of this, like, people's pro careers and like.
No, you got to do what you got to do. You got to do what gives you the best chance to win a game.
You got to win the game.
Nebraska's got to start winning games. So I think over. Next question I have. We kind of talked about this, but the 3-3-5. What's maybe the most intriguing part of it to you as we get ready to watch this? Like, what has your attention.
How it fits, how they're going to, because they may, like, you know, when you're playing a power run team, the Iowas.
The Minnesotas,
and at times Illinois. What's our adjustment? How are we actually going to play those? Because it's not going to be always like 3-3-5.
Right.
Like, we're going to shift, you know, in and out of a 4- or 5-man front, like how those fits work. I don't really know how it all fits up, really, how they adjust. So I'm going to be watching closely to see how they adjust to power running, and just like, you know, like how we're moving and how our movement is. It's going to be interesting.
I'm most interested in seeing people talk about one of the best things about the 3-3-5 is the creativity you can then have to bring people from different places to bring plus pressures and different stuff like that.
Yeah.
I'm just curious what that looks like. Cause I don't think there's even a Garrett Nelson level pass rusher on this team.
No.
On paper, but this is a defense that wants to play aggressively. And I just want to see if the scheme can manufacture that stuff.
Well, the one thing I keep seeing, from Tony White, the D coordinator, is, he wants guys playing fast. He wants guys being aggressive, playing fast, not thinking a lot. So I do like the sense of it's like, it's going to be aggressive, I think, and we're going to have people flying around, which in the end will cover up for a lot of mistakes, I think. Mm-hmm. So you still got to be detailed and do your job and, you know, be strong in your assignments. But I do like defenses that seemingly are like people are flying around.
I know.
So this is the kind of defense where, like, it's set up to be that way. You have to make movement on the D-line and everybody's stacked flying off of it. So I do think hopefully we'll be playing fast.
I think Rule even said it at Big Ten Media Days that they want to dictate, they want to create negative plays. Like, this is not, because I think it got to the point, especially in 2021, and they got really good at it, that 2021, the JoJo Doman, like, they got really good at, like, kind of a bend, don't break, keep everything in front of you.
Yes.
They got really good at that.
This would be kind of the opposite.
I think this
of that.
Is the complete opposite yeah. of that. And I'm excited to see what that looks like.
Yeah.
Next question I wrote down. Which assistant coach has your eye the most? And this can either be because you're just intrigued by them or you are maybe a little skeptical of them. Four came to mind for me.
Okay, let me hear yours.
Well, obviously, Tony White and Marcus Satterfield, just yep. by its very nature of like offensive defensive coordinator. And then Donovan Raiola on the O-line, and then Garrett McGuire at the wide receivers. I want to see what Doogie Howser looks like
Doogie
out there.
House.
Like, they have him in like a stroller. Right
there. Like, Garrett, what's that? He's signaling with his rattle.
Sub him in.
McGuire's upset. Gives his pacifier. His receivers are dropping balls. He's very upset. Oh, burp him. Burp him. We're not sure what's wrong with him. Give him a burp.
So ridiculous to do that to him. But
no, I actually am excited about him as a coach. He seemingly is like a prodigy.
Watched, like,
I think he's like a
him,
prodigy.
Like, he looks, yes. He looks and acts the part.
He's a coach's kid. Like, yeah. You know, you just know he knows the game. Like, it's just, I give Rule credit for not being scared to make a hire like that. But he is young. He looks young. It's one of those, he's a baby face. And
oh my God.
Oh,
so
I mean, that's
stupid.
So good.
Thinking of like, look who's talking. And it's like,
hey, get over here. What are you doing over here?
I think Raiola's fascinating. And again, I mean, I don't know that, but I'll say Satterfield just because, like, listen, when games start, offensive coordinating and play calling always ends up being the most interesting.
I think I actually, this Tony White, I think I feel
good about
comfortable
yeah.
with him. Barrett made a good point that he knew this guy came up in like in that 3-3-5 system, like with the guy that basically like
yes.
it was his system, like the people that had been doing it for years and years, like he's always done it. So he knows all the little beaters that you use on a 3-3-5.
Right.
And that's really one of the things that people that maybe don't know football versus the people that know it well don't really grasp is like every defense has a weakness, right? Like mm-hmm. Every offense has a weakness. In every one of these things, you have to have the check for the check. The tit for the tat, like mm-hmm. the thing that you have to be able to adjust for all the things that are bad for whatever play I run. And the better you get at a system, that's why systems are important, is you get good at all those little, well, if they do this, I do this. If they do that, mm-hmm. and then it becomes like second nature. Tom Brady, he goes out there and he goes, I know this defense and here's what they're going to do. If I do this, so this will be wide open. That's how he beats people. He's right. seen it all 10,000 times. It's not hard for him to see that's where the ball's going.
Exactly. And so that's why I don't feel, I mean, as much as a 3-3-5 might take a little bit for it to, but like, I feel good about Tony White. Satterfield, it's like this offense yes. feels like this wasn't what he was running at South Carolina. It just will be interesting to see what it ends up looking like.
Yeah, I think for me, he's got a system, so you could say it's the same thing as Tony White. I would say, though, the pieces that he's working with are going to be, I think it's a little bit more challenging than defense. I think the pieces you're working with that be a great offense, I don't know if they matter more, but to me, I think maybe, I just don't know what I just don't know what he's going to do with these pieces. I just have
I
no
either.
Idea. I don't know.
I don't either.
Can he manufacture a run game with this line, those running backs, and this quarterback? Maybe. The pass game, though, it's like, I don't know.
You know how it is. Whenever we do these game recaps, I mean, play calling and stuff always ends up being like an interesting thing to analyze and dissect. Yeah. So he's the guy. I mean,
yeah, he's the guy.
He's the answer to me. And I think a lot of people would feel that way. But
yeah.
Okay, next thing. Two-part question. The newcomer, excluding Jeff Sims, the newcomer you're most excited to watch, and then the returner, a returning player you're most excited to watch. Newcomer, we can't say Sims because that's boring.
Newcomer that was not on our roster last season.
Correct. Why did you want to get your Fedoni on?
No, because Fedoni's.
Or did you want, like, in terms of a guy that...
I'm thinking of these freshmen, right? I'm thinking of these freshmen. So Maverick Noonan, this Prince, I forget his last name.
Yeah,
Prince.
Oh, my goodness. Prince Will.
Purple Rain himself.
Purple Rain.
But anyway,
then Maverick Noonan got hurt.
So those two looked really nice in the spring game. Van Poppel is a guy that could actually potentially play. Yep. Gunnar Gatula could actually play. He's going to play probably. But really, it's Malachi Coleman or one of these other young, I think it's like Jaden Doss, Jalen.
That's right.
Jalen, they're all like the speedster dudes, freshman receivers. I think one of these three receivers has to contribute.
Well, it could be Betts too, you know.
I
wrote down, I mean, Kemp, we've talked about Kemp a million times. I would probably say MJ Sherman.
Oh, yeah. See, I thought we meant like, those are, I guess, transfer. Yeah.
Newcomer.
So,
sorry. Newcomer. So would it change? Would you have?
Yeah. One of those three guys. Judy.
MJ Sherman.
Sherman. Kemp.
Chief Borders.
Big Chief.
Big Chief. Robert Parrish.
The Big Chief. Chief Borders is our team representative. He's been there 3 weeks. It was unbelievable. I couldn't believe. He seems like a great kid, though. But legitimately, was the, like, I'm the representative of the team. I've been on the team how long? It's a great. Week? I've been here a week.
But I think MJ Sherman would be the, I've already talked a million times about Kemp, but MJ Sherman's up there for me. Then if I had to pick a freshman, I would love to see Malachi Coleman get on the field.
He's a big body. He's fast. He's got all the tools. You know, is he ready to play, though? That's a whole nother thing. Like, can you digest a playbook? Can you block? Can you run route? You know, there's so much more than just high school is like, dude, fly, slant.
I mean,
that's
dealing
it.
You have a 15-year-old on you at corner. I mean, come on. Oh, boy. Oh, geez.
Coach Brown.
George McFly back there. Like, oh, God. I need help, safety.
I want to. I don't know if this is going to work.
Hey, you. Strong safety. Get your damn hands over here.
Hey, Malachi. Get your damn hands off her. McFly.
Are all high school corners, they got the demeanor and confidence of a George McFly.
In Nebraska, when they see Malachi Coleman, it's like, oh, no.
Oh, God. Huh? Okay.
Incendiary, Malcolm. You're incendiary.
Oh, Back to the Future. People don't know. Okay, returner. I put Gabe Irvin. Want to see if he pops, gets in a groove. See if my man can do his thing. We've been on Irvin Island for quite some time. There's not a lot of people left on Irvin Island.
Around. People are coming around. We were early. We were early adopters of the Gabe Irvin train.
Yeah.
But people are coming.
I wrote down, he has 57 career carries. I feel like 50 of them were poorly blocked and in terrible situations.
Couldn't agree. He got all the bad. I hope he's a good teammate. Maybe they just didn't block for him. Maybe,
I don't know.
He seems like a good guy, so I wouldn't say. But like, he didn't. They did not block for him.
Do you have a returner?
You know what? I want to say Fedoni, but I'm not going to say Fedoni.
He was my honorable mention.
Because he's a jinx. It's a jinx to do that because he needs to play one game. And then he's unjinxed.
I think I might go buy some champagne and just pop it. If he plays and catches a ball, I'm popping the champagne. I'm all in on Fedoni. Fedoni, if you're listening, I love you. I'm all in on you, pal.
It's too much hype. It's that much hype is bad for a person. We need the hype to subside so then he can then let it go. Like, then you can go play. There's too much buildup around him. I just don't like when there's that much buildup. God, who do I want to see?
I mean, there's a lot of guys you could pick.
I kind of want to see a lineman. I mean,
Marcus Washington. You could put.
I want to see Noelle. I want to see
Ethan Rowdy Roddy Piper.
Ethan Rowdy Roddy Turner. Turn your poker in.
That's so stupid. That doesn't even make sense. You could pick any of the Hartzog. You could pick our boy Isaac Gifford. Shouts out to the 402 LSU.
I'm excited to see Gifford play safety. Yeah. That's a bit of a change. Like, because he's going to have to be a little bit more, he was so in that slot edge area. He's gonna
it's
have
a
to be
totally
a little,
different thing.
It's a
for
different
him.
Game. Yeah,
and he's important. Yeah. Now the other guy I wrote down was what's arguably my favorite player last year is Tommy Hill.
Tommy Hill.
Rule has been praised. Like he has come a long ways.
I Nick, I'm gonna be slow on this one. One
of my favorite parts of last season, which was just not that fun of a season, was how Tommy Hill wanted to return every kickoff and got mad when he couldn't and brought everything out when he should. I don't know. I'm excited to watch old Tommy Hill play.
I mean, Tommy Hill, I think he's clearly got some talent.
Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, if you just turn on the Georgia Southern tape and be like, what did Tommy do here?
I don't know. I think he's dark horse NFL
draft
pick.
Is he playing DB?
I think he's playing defense, which is surprising.
He went D to O back to D.
When you go from one side of the ball to the other side of the ball back to the other side of the ball, like you, that's not good. But Rule has praised him.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, like I said, I'm a little skeptical with him now.
Okay.
But
well,
hey,
he's
got enough talent where, like, if you're even talking about him, that means he's worth talking about. But
I loved watching him just be angry that he couldn't bring anything.
He
out.
Wanted not many people seem to want those kickoffs. He wanted it at least.
He wanted him back. Well, didn't they move him to receiver one time too in one of the road games, and it didn't go well. But I love the guy. Him okay. and Fedoni are my two favorite players on the team. What did you say? Turn your coke around?
Turn your coke around?
We like at line. You have Ben's great Scott.
Ben's great Scott.
You have Teddy Pennywise down. You have Ethan Rowdy Roddy.
That's pretty good. That's a good one.
Turn your coke
around.
That's not even a funny joke. Okay, where are we at time wise?
The more nicknames we got, the better the season will be. Just remember,
there's
that.
No question about that. There's a direct correlation between the two. Okay, I'm going to skip two questions, get to the last one, then we'll get out of here because we both got dinner to go eat and
right.
kids to take care of. I want to get your just reaction to Pac-12 is like dying.
Oh,
I mean,
God.
Good Lord. Colorado going back to the Big 12, Oregon and Washington going to the Big 10. What's your reaction to all this?
It's bizarre. It's so bizarre that almost like I saw some article today in The Athletic where they quoted a coach saying like, you think this is it? This is just the beginning. Like it's all going to these, like, the super conference that they're going to get rid of there's going to be
separate
40
from,
teams yeah. and they're going to separate from the NCAA. They're going to pay players. It's going to be a minor league NFL essentially.
Right.
And it's like, there's going to be no academics required. And I'm just like, it kind of made me take a step back, go like, whoa,
I know.
Like we've kind of joked about that, but like, this is the stuff that's happening. Like it's not happening slowly. It's happening fast now.
Yeah.
These things are happening fast. You know, it's like, God,
Texas
dang.
And Oklahoma going to the SEC, and then all of a sudden,
USC,
you know,
UCLA.
Like, these big seismic moves are happening.
The big units have all moved. So
yes.
Think of it this way. Is Oklahoma, Texas, USC, UCLA, Oregon, Washington have made the move.
Don't get
the only,
bigger than...
The only big ones left are
Notre Dame,
and then anybody in the ACC that's getting itchy, which they say Florida State, Clemson... They're getting itchy,
yes.
Nick.
Yeah, Florida State is basically like put a for sale sign up. Like, hey, we're open for business here. You know, like there's an element of it. Like, it's not surprising, even though it's surprising. You just knew that this was like all this stuff feels like an inevitability. It's hilarious. I mean, one of our only podcasts we recorded was reacting to the Big 12 or the new Big 10 schedules that are coming out, but all those
they're
schedules,
gone, aren't
they're
gone. They? Yeah,
they're gone. I mean, they're literally gonna have to whoever made the Flex Protect Plus plan, like that's gone, you know. So it's just like, that's how fast
it's crazy.
These things are moving.
So one of the first things I looked at when with Oregon and Washington is like, if you look at that now, it's actually what I think they should do. is
cut it in half.
Nebraska. So Nebraska, Minnesota, Iowa, and maybe throw in Illinois.
Purdue or Illinois is coming with.
I'd say we take Illinois.
Yeah.
And then you take USC, UCLA, Oregon, Washington. That's the West.
You got your two,
The East. You play the full schedule.
Right.
You have nine. So it basically be, I think, nine per side. And then you play the 10th game as the Big Ten championship.
I'm in. I'm on it.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that is a better model to me. And then keep the rivalries. You need rivalries. You need. Whoa. You can't have 18 teams and everybody plays somebody different every year. Like, we play Ohio State every fourth year. It's like, no, play the teams.
I got to imagine the big dogs. You're not going to have USC and Ohio State in the same conference and not have USC and Ohio State play every year.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see how they balance all of that stuff. I think the thing that I wrote down was it's amazing the discrepancy with the decisions and decision makers with how well-liked these decisions are. Where it's like, I feel like the vast majority of people don't like any of these moves, yet they continually get done, you know?
Because the money's just outrageous. It's outrageous. It's so much that Oregon could have been the big dog of the Pac-12 and they literally got their deal done, and they were like, okay, you're the big dog now. And it took all of 1 second before they looked and said, how much money?
Right.
We're gone.
Right.
We don't care about winning. We want that money.
And that's where it's like, I get how you can't make business decisions solely based on like what the masses want or like. But at the same time, this reminded me of a podcast conversation between Chuck Klosterman and Bill Simmons when they were talking about load management in the NBA and superstars sitting out and missing a lot of games. And Klosterman had a point, and I'm paraphrasing here, of basically, like, I think some people have forgotten why basketball exists.
Yeah.
Like, it exists because we want it to exist and we like watching it.
Yes.
Players almost make these decisions, or these organizations make these decisions to sit players out of games in a way that suggests that basketball exists because it has to exist and it always will exist in its most popular form.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I take that same school of thought and I apply it to college football, where I college football exists on some level because of the history, because of the traditions, because of the rivalries.
Yes.
And we make these decisions thumbing our nose at certain elements of the sport's popularity. And I do worry about that ending up biting people when all this dust settles. Does that make sense? Nick, I don't know if that like correlation.
That's so well. It's so well said, because it is that disconnect with what people actually want. They want what we've had. They don't want something new. They don't want the NFL. They want college football, which we liked what we had.
Loved it.
And they're changing it to something that we're not sure that we want. Right? We're not saying that we won't like it.
Yeah.
I don't know that I won't like it, but there's a chance I won't like it as much. As much.
I'm fairly confident I'm not gonna like it as much.
Yeah, and
as I did.
And I think sometimes people get like too caught up in the like, well, the players' rights are these, and it's like, that's good. I'm okay with players' rights. Great. I'm great with NBA guys' load management. Good for you. But I don't want to watch the backups play.
Right. If I go watch the Lakers.
Stop watching you and everybody stops watching you, you don't have a job.
Exactly.
So there's that part of me that goes like, we're doing this stuff because like, oh, this is like, it's kind of, you get out of touch with like, who are we trying to like do this for? It's for the fans in the communities of these places, and we're getting away from it a little bit.
And that's why that's why I love listening to Chuck Klosterman when he parachutes in and talks about sports, because he has this perspective on it that is interesting to me. And I just remember him saying that. And I think a lot of that school of thought applies to this. It's like what we like about college football is fundamentally changing.
Yes.
And like you said, when you, I turn on, an, I buy tickets and I go to the Lakers game. I'm going there because I want to watch LeBron play.
Yeah.
That, and to a certain extent, like basketball exists at its core because people like watching certain players or certain teams play,
yeah.
you know? And if you get too far removed from that, of like why you exist, I just, and I know this is a really deep thought, but I worry, and I always bring this up, never forget at one point, three of the most popular or arguably most popular sports in America were boxing, baseball, and horse racing.
Yeah.
So yeah. if you think, oh, it's too big, college football's too big to fail or too big to ever, it's like, eh. It's what people thought about baseball in the 1930s, 40s, 50s, 60s. Like, it's what people thought about boxing then. It's what, like, and now look at it.
Nick, I'm telling you, my thoughts on college basketball.
Right.
Like, I think pro, I mean, I think college football is in a place that I still really like.
Mm-hmm.
College basketball is not in a place I like that much.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same mindset. It's worse in college basketball. Like, people leave every year.
Every year is a different team.
The best players leave after a year. You never have the talent develop. You never build the continuity. That's happening in football slowly and sure. And then pretty soon they'll be like, well, these guys are going to start going pro. After, they're going to be able to go pro after their first year. They're going to be able to go out of high school. They're going to, it's all going to just saturate. But then they're doing the second bad thing in football now, which is they're breaking down the conferences. They're making it something else. They're ruining the rivalries.
Yeah.
They're keeping, I mean, like, you know, Michigan, Ohio State, they're keeping that because the money's good. But like Nebraska, we've lost Oklahoma. We've right. lost, I mean, we, like, this is where it's like, we don't know who our rivals are almost, right? As a traditional program. Like, that's a weird place to be. So the more that that happens, you know, the Pac-12 teams are now scattering about. Like, it's like, this is the stuff that, like, the people doing this are playing with the traditions.
Yeah, and it just,
and you're playing with fire. I don't know that it maybe it'll work and we'll love it more, but I'm looking at college basketball and going, be careful what you're doing.
I agree.
Because college basketball is in a place where it's like they've lost a lot of the loyal fans that loved the greatness of college basketball in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. That was just, it was amazing. I mean, that was an amazing product.
Yeah, so I just, there was a feeling of inevitability with it. I think we all get it. I think when people look at the money to be made, I understand it. I think there's also a deeper conversation about, I think I heard Sam McEwen talking about this, you know, the numbers of people for higher education, you know, enrollment numbers are starting to dwindle a little yeah. bit, you know, and so these universities, they got to make sure they
it's a money maker.
It's a money maker yeah. for them as well. But yeah, I just, you know, it's, you don't want to ever lose sight of the essence of why we like something and yeah. stray too far from it. I mean, we have, over the past couple of weeks, we've watched 100-plus-year-old conference die.
Gone overnight.
Poof.
To join a Midwestern. To join a Midwestern conference. The Big Ten is the Midwest.
Right.
If you look at the traditional Midwest, that's the Big Ten. It goes from Ohio to Nebraska, Minnesota. That is it. That's literally the definition of the Midwest.
Yeah.
It ends there. The West starts after that.
Yeah.
And this, so we have a little bit of East Coast involved now with our Midwest, and we have a West Coast teams. It's bizarre.
It's crazy. It's crazy. So, well, there you go. I had a couple other questions. I need to save these. I always do this to you. I have a couple other good ones for you. But
that was
we got plenty of time.
That was a great thought.
I know I wanted to end on that one because I wanted to get your take on it. But yeah, it's not. I think the biggest thing is it's not surprising. You know, it's like, I mean, I think we all knew this was going to happen.
Yeah.
And it's just hilarious that we wasted a podcast talking about the 2024 and 2025 schedules. You know.
We didn't waste it. We did it.
We never waste time. Let's go talk to Turn Your Coke Around and Ethan Rowdy Roddy Piper.
Get your damn hands off her, Malachi.
A Herd at Sports Network production.